All right, so let's bounce back to the Republican debate because I wanted to get to other things. Now, I didn't get sound clips. As you know, I don't do the sound clip thing as much as other shows do. I know, just like I don't do the phone calls as much as other shows do. I don't. I feel you want to hear from me. I feel you want to hear a fresh take on debates or controversies that arise or policy. That's my feeling. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you just want to hear clips and you want to hear other people call the show and pontificate about their theories. I'm not looking to fill an hour and a half of other people talking and clips. That's not what I'm looking to do. So we don't got a lot of clips. We're gonna when I do play clips, they're because they're funny. They're things that amuse me. Nothing last night was really funny. Like I said, everybody had their own stump speech. It was everybody's stump speech on issues that were asked. Rather it was trade, rather it was Cuba, rather it was immigration. Everybody had their stump speech. And it's something that we've heard time in, time again. Same thing. Now, people criticize Trump. I mean, go figure. They criticize Trump all the time. Well, you know, he was short on policy. He was short on detail. That's the new thing. It used to be Trump was short on policy. That was it. Just short on policy. Now it's he's short on details of the policy. That's the argument now. That's the argument now. She's short, well, you know, short on details. One of the kerfuckles, I guess you could say. Is that what we would call it? The kerfuckles was that Trump was incoherent on the Cuba situation. He wasn't specific on the Cuba situation. He just said, we have to make a better deal. People are constantly criticizing the concept of a better deal. They really are. When Trump gives that answer, people are constantly critical because they say, yeah, but how? What? Well, if you have a trade deal, if you have a deal with Cuba, if you have a it's a deal. It's a deal. We have to have a better deal. Again, remember, all of these nuanced or elaborate schemes and positions are exactly what they are. At the end of the day, it's about a better deal. It's about a better deal. It's really that simple. It's really that simple. You have secretaries of state. You have different security officials. You have different back channel negotiators. You're the president. You're sitting in your desk. Okay? Just sitting there, chilling. Maybe you're playing Tetris. I don't know. And you're trying to work a deal with Iran. Let's take Iran for example. And Trump gave a great answer last night, and nobody really picked up on it. Nobody really talked about it. But you had the moderator say, the Iran deal, you have talked about it being a bad deal. How would you have done things differently? And Trump said, well, I wouldn't have given them $150 billion without getting our prisoners back first. I wouldn't have done the things that we have done. And Ted Cruz chimed in and said, Donald is fine with the deal. I will rip it up on day one. Donald will not rip it up on day one. And Trump chimed in and said, well, listen, I'm going to police the deal. If they violate the deal in any way, then the deal is void. But the biggest part of the deal was the $150 billion they were given, and it's gone. The money's gone. So if you rip the deal up on day one, what good is it? You're not getting $150 billion back. They've already spent that money. And remember, you still have 7, 8, 9 months left of this president. So that money's gone, and you still got 8 months worth of damage that Iran can do from this deal. What are you going to rip up? What are you going to rip up? You're going to rip up the only thing that's left, which is the inspections and things like that? Prisoners are back. The money's already been given. And Trump gave that answer. He said, Ted, the money's gone. Can't get that money back. They're already spending money with other countries. That bell has been rung. There was nothing in that deal that said, okay, we're going to give you $150 billion, but you have to buy. You have to spend. You have to give us a piece of that money through these businesses. None of that was done. So you're going to rip up a deal that really benefits us, because everything that benefited them, they've already burned through. They've burned through the cash. They've done the things with the hostages. They've got their people back. So the only thing that's left to rip up is the inspections and them not being able to enrich a certain amount of uranium for 10 years and so forth and so on. And that is all part of a deal. And I can't say what don't people understand, because there are huge chunks of the American electorate that understand. It's that simple. A deal. Our negotiators, John Kerry, whoever, they come back to the president, they go, Mr. President, here are the things that Iran wants. And the president goes, no, no, yes, no. John Kerry goes, I don't know if they'll go for it. The president goes, okay, if they don't, it's no deal, okay? We haven't had a deal with Iran in 30, 40, 50, however many years it's been. But that's not the case. President Obama cares more about legacy, more about a library, more about people going, look what this president did. He accomplished so many things. He wanted the Iran deal to be the equivalent to Ronald Reagan's deal, the Berlin Wall. I mean, it's obvious. It's obvious. But again, how do you explain to somebody, how do you, especially in 1 minute, on a debate, how do you do that? How do you do that with anybody? Even a Jake Tapper in a Situation Room interview for 3 hours. How do you explain anybody how you're going to negotiate? How do you do that? Well, Jake, I will sit behind the desk and I will dispatch my negotiators, my Secretary of State and whoever else. They will go to Cuba and they will say, hey, Cuba, you got to have elections. I mean, that was the crux of Marco Rubio last night. When Trump said, I'm not in favor of what Obama did, but I'm not against it. He goes, I'm somewhere in the middle. We're in the middle. The deal that we negotiated with Castro is a bad deal. It's a bad deal. It has to be negotiated better. And some people laughed. Ha, 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 ha. And then Marco Rubio chimed in and said, no, here's what has to be done. First, they have to be told that before anything can happen, there must be elections. Well, that's a non-starter. So in turn, it goes back to the way it's been, which hasn't done anything for 50 years. Sure, it might play to the Cubans that are sitting in the audience for that Florida debate. And it might sound good in a rhetoric-filled response of elections and putting people in prison and all of these things that ultimately don't mean anything if your first stance is, well, you got to have elections. And Castro goes, well, what do you mean? This is how we run our country. This is what we do. That's off the table. Oh, well, then we're done. Well, that's not negotiations. That's not negotiations. So when Trump goes, listen, you got to negotiate. Very simple. How do you explain in 1 minute the negotiating process? You have a bunch of things written down when you negotiate with someone. But those things have to be reasonable. If you want a raise, if you've been working for a company for 20 years and you want a raise, and say you're making $50,000 a year, and you go to them and say, hey, I would like a raise. And they go, you know what? We can negotiate. We could talk about that. What do you think? And you go, well, I want $1 million. It's a non-starter. It's a non-starter. That's ridiculous. So to tell Cuba, here's what we want. You to have free elections. So basically – you need to pull yourself out of power. You no longer can have this. You no longer can be the president of your country. You no longer can have Russia. You can no longer be associated with Russia. They cannot have their boats, ships, submarines, whatever, on your island, on your country, on your territory. Can't have it anymore. Yeah, I mean these are all non-starters. These are all non-starters. And you say, Rob, why is it a non-starter? Because we deal with dictators all over the world. We deal with oppressive regimes all over the world. And you can't treat one regime and one dictator differently than we do another dictator. You really can't. You just can't. You just can't. So that was one of those questions where people said, but Trump didn't give any specifics. Well, again, it's hard to give specifics on something that you don't know anything about. You know, Marco Rubio was just basically reading off your standard talking points about Cuba. They have a dictator. They put people in jail who speak out against the government. Russia has their ships there. I mean, the list goes on. The only way we will do business with them and resume dialogue is if they reverse course on every single one of those issues. It's just ridiculous. And because Marco Rubio put that in this long, passionate, rhetoric-filled answer, doesn't mean that he somehow knows more or is better to be president of the United States. It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. As far as China and the trade imbalance, and as Ted Cruz stated, what Donald Trump wants when he talks about a 45% tax is ridiculous, because the American people are going to pay for that. The American people. Donald Trump doesn't understand. And again, Trump says, Ted, very politely, again, Trump doesn't criticize. Trump says the devaluation of money, the manipulation of currency is what creates this imbalance. We need to control that, and that can be done. And the fact that our goods to go to China and these countries get taxed, but their products coming in don't. And I didn't say they will be taxed 45%. That is a threat. You can start that threat at that point, and you can negotiate. And at the end of the day, if that means some of these products we have to make here in this country, then that's what we'll do. We will bring factories and manufacturing back to this country. We will produce the products here, and we will buy those products. People applauded. You had individuals, different pundits like SE Cup tweeting that was unrealistic. A few other people said that was preposterous. Had to actually sit there and go, you know, are these people so jaded? Are they so jaded by where we are today and thinking this is how it's always been for the past, forget 100 years, but 30 years? Are these people just so much in a bubble? There was a time, and it wasn't too long ago, that we actually made things in this country. We actually produced things in this country. It wasn't 50, 60, 70 years ago. Say 20 years ago, say 30 years ago, we used to make things in this country. We, our leaders, who get big money from corporations, from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different raiders, corporate raiders. They're the ones that make the money from these trade deals. When you make it easier for foreign countries to make products to ship into our country and compete with those products that we make, but those countries can sell them to us or these corporate giants at half the price that we can make them, it kills the American worker. It destroys the American worker. Yes, it puts billions of dollars in these corporate raiders. And that's all these trade deals are about. That's all these trade deals are about. We used to make products in this country. So it's not like we can't. It's not like we can't make shirts. It's not like we can't make socks. It's not like we can't make shoes. It's not like we can't make cars. And when people say, yeah, but China and Bangladesh, they can make it cheaper. Well, guess what? Guess what? We enable them to make it cheaper. We enable them to give us those goods without any tax. And when people like Ted Cruz say, yeah, but that tax is just going to be put onto the American people. No, it won't. You can only charge so much for a pair of socks. You can only charge so much for a t-shirt. And if China goes, oh man, we're getting taxed. We normally would charge $1 for this sock. We're going to have to charge $10. Guess what? The American people aren't going to buy that sock. They're not going to buy a $10 sock. It's not going to happen. And China's going to have to, guess what? Make less money. They're going to have to make less money. They're going to have to make less money. And if they don't want to make less money and they decide, you know what? We're just not going to sell you socks anymore. Oh, well, I guess we'll have 10, 20, 30 different sock factories all over the United States employing thousands and thousands and thousands of people to make socks. And instead of buying a sock for a dollar, maybe you have to pay $1.50. It's American made. It's an American factory. It employs thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of Americans who then take that money and they buy food. They go to the movies. They buy other goods. And we raise our GDP. We raise the standard of living for everybody. We used to do this. The only reason we stopped doing these things is because the deals that our president and our leaders would make didn't benefit the people. They benefited the individuals who gave these people millions and millions and millions of dollars for them to get elected, reelected, presidential libraries. And so forth and so on. Listen, when I go to Walmart or I go to Target or I go to H&M, okay? This shirt I'm wearing is from H&M. It's a beautiful shirt. It's cotton. You know how much I paid for it? $4.95. Guess what? If this shirt was $7.95, I'd still buy it. When I look at the price and it's $4.95 at H&M, I go, I can't believe this shirt's $4.95. I can't believe this is $4.95. Jesus. $4.95. I'd pay $10 for the shirt. Jesus. And imagine if somebody said to you, all right, here's the situation. That shirt you're buying is $4.95. Oh, really? Okay. And, well, you're no longer going to be able to buy those $4.95 shirts. Really? I love these shirts. Well, here's what we're going to do. That shirt was made in Bangladesh. Okay, yeah. And then it was sewn in the Philippines. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, we're not going to do business with them anymore. All right. So you're going to have to pay $6.95 for that same shirt. Really? Well, and it's still coming. Well, nope, it's not going to come from Bangladesh anymore. It's going to come from Indiana. Indiana, yes. We're opening a factory, and we're going to employ 1,000 Americans, and they're going to make that same shirt, but you're going to be paying $6.95, maybe $7.95 tops. Guess what? The American people will be tickled pink to pay an extra $2 from 5 to 7, knowing that you're employing thousands of Americans, making this country better? Yeah. I've said this before. There's nothing wrong, okay? There is absolutely nothing wrong with American nationalism. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not a Nazi thing. It's not a KKK thing. to put your country first is something that should be in everybody's mind. That should be in everybody's mind. Whether you're black, whether you're white, whether you're Chinese. If you were born in this country, if you immigrated to this country legally, if you immigrated to this country legally, you played by the rules, you assimilated, you considered this country your country. Not, well, you live here. You should be proud of this country. This country comes first. And we should do everything that we can to make it about this country first. It's like what I've said. When you see people, and it's nice, we help other countries. We help other sick, needy kids. But we've got sick, needy kids here in this country. We have the starving people in this country. Let's fix the things in this country before we go and fix other people's problems. And I'm not talking about security. You got people in other countries that want to hurt us. Well, we got to destroy them before they can destroy us. I'm not talking about that. But when we're going to villages or cities and we're buying school desks or we're creating schools and we're helping with clean water. We got dirty, filthy, lead-filled water in Michigan. Let's fix that. Let's not worry about dirty mud water that Haji's drinking and the Sudan. Yeah, I feel bad for him. But guess what? I feel worse for the people in Michigan. I feel worse for the Americans that are drinking lead water. I feel bad for children that are homeless, that are starving. Yeah, I feel bad for the Yiddies that are being killed in Iraq, and they're hungry and they're being forced on a hill. But guess what? I feel worse for the children that are hungry here in the United States. The kids that are in orphanages here, kids that were abused by their parents, that are living in foster homes. I feel bad for them. Let's take care of them. There's nothing wrong with thinking country first. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not racist. And when we sit there and say, listen, how do we fix Social Security? How do we fix Social Security? We have to make better deals. Oh, that's not a plan. But it is a plan. Raising Social Security, raising the age requirement, having Social Security accounts, doing all of these things are really just tricks, games. That's what they are. They're tricks and games. It's not being successful. It's not thinking like a business. It's not thinking like a team. It's not thinking about winning. So when Marco Rubio gives this elaborate, we're gonna raise the minimum wage because, or the retirement age, because my children, in 30 years, this and this whole nuanced thing, and Trump goes, well, listen, if we just negotiate better deals and bring our GDP up. I mean, just make more money. And people go, ugh, that's not ludicrous. That's not ludicrous. If we get compensated from different countries for doing different things like protecting them, and we say, hey, guess what, guys? Instead of $1 billion, you're going to have to give us $10 billion. What are they going to say? No. Okay, well, we'll pull our troops out. No problem. See ya. It's like we always try to hurt our own country. So instead of putting pressure on other countries, and making other countries uneasy, we in turn do it to our own people. So when you hear of Social Security reform, it's hurting our people. Well, this is what we're going to have to do. Some of you are going to have to suffer. We're going to have to raise the age here. Some of you rich people are just not going to be able to get your money. Regardless if you've paid for the last 60 years of your life. I mean, listen, I have a... My dad is pretty well off. My dad's pretty well off. And guess what? He gets Social Security also. And guess what? He deserves it. Does he need it? No. But he's 76 years old. And from the age of 20, the age of 19, he's paid into the system. And regardless if he needs it now or not, it's his money. It's his. He's entitled to it. Now, if he wants to give it away every month, that's fine. But the government shouldn't say, oh, well, you know what? You did good, so you don't need that money. That's not how it works. And for people like Rubio to say, oh, well, people like him, you just don't get your money. And we're going to have to raise the age. So the American people, you're going to have to suffer. No. No. There's a better way. And that way is negotiating. That way is saying, how do we get more money? How? How do we get more money? We're not going to tax everybody. How do we get more money? You know, out here in California, let me give you an example. I mean, not to go nuts and go off the veer off the trail here, but out here in California, a legislator wants to charge a quarter, charge a quarter on every single sugary good that is sold out in California, whether it's a candy bar, whether it's a soda, anything that is full of sugar. And the estimates that are coming in equal close to $3 billion. And then that $3 billion is going to be put back into an education program of telling people how to eat more healthy. I mean, think about that. I mean, it's a preposterous idea in so many ways. And I think the biggest way is that the money is not being used for anything good. So you're punishing people to raise billions of dollars, because that's what you're doing. You're punishing people. Because there's a lot of people that eat sugary substances, and they're not great, big, disgusting, unhealthy, fat people. And that's a fact. That is a fact. So you're going to punish all these people. You're going to raise $3 billion, and you're not even going to use that to build schools, build clinics. You're going to use that to make PSAs. So you're going to use that money to then hire people that you know to make billboards, to make commercials. I mean, let's face it, that's what's going to happen. It's like a super PAC. You raise $10 million to attack somebody like Trump or Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or Rubio. You run the PAC. You pay yourself because you got to run the PAC. And then you have to pay people you know to make commercials. It's just one BS scam. So there, we punish ourselves. It's like Social Security. How do we reform Social Security? We're going to punish ourselves. We're going to punish the American people. Instead of looking at the deals we have with all these countries, instead of re-examining the bureaucracy in our federal government, hell, how about cutting the pay? How about just cutting the pay by $5,000? Again, these are not things that are a quick fix on something like Social Security, but these are examples of somebody getting into the Oval Office who has no ties to anybody and that run the country as a business and thinking of our country first. Not one thing adds up to $500 billion. It's multiple things. It's multiple things. If you're going to put a 25-cent tax and punish the people of California for eating sugary things, but you said, hey, this $2, $3 billion is going to build these six nonprofit hospitals or these 10 nonprofit clinics. So people with no health care, no insurance, can go here for a checkup. They could go here to get Medicaid. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Sure. You know what? If that works, and we could actually see 10 clinics, we could actually see 20 clinics, you know what? Throw a 25-cent tax nationally on everything. Sure. How much could you raise there? Well, we would raise $250 billion. Huh. Well, what would we do with that $250? Well, what we'll do is we'll put it in the Social Security fund. Oh, I mean, if we could do smart things, that's cool. That's great. That's awesome. But we don't. We don't. Because ultimately, when these schemes come up, it's just a way to pay other people that are part of the scheme. The money never goes to anything that doesn't benefit politicians or politicians' friends that are corporate raiders. Reforming Social Security is easy to do. if we just renegotiate deals that we have with every nation, you would get a huge, huge, huge chunk of savings. Again, we punish the American people. We punish the American people. We're constantly thinking about other countries. We're constantly. And I don't know when this happened. I don't know when this happened. Has it been just in the last 7 years under Obama? Has it? Was it like this in the 80s? Was it like this in the 70s? It definitely wasn't like this in the 70s. Definitely wasn't like this in the 80s. We had manufacturing jobs. You know, it seems like the worst trade deals and the worst negotiations with other countries on their security, our foreign aid. Seems like all of these things have been done under Democrats. Seems like NAFTA was done under a Democrat. Seems like this new trade deal, this TPP, Democrat. The very people, the party that tells us they are for the working man. Remember, we're always told that. Democrats are for the working man. Republicans are for the rich. But it seems like the Democrats are not for the working man. Because if they were for the working man, under their watch, factories wouldn't have been closed. Everything that's gone on in this country as far as producing something would not have disappeared. And it's disappeared on their watch. It's disappeared on their watch, their trade deals. They don't look out for the little guy. They don't look out for the working man. They've written that man off. They've written the working class off. I gave you a list of states yesterday that are not full of Latinos. I get fired up. I get fired up. I do. I get fired up. I get fired up. I get fired up. I'm very fired up. Those are the nuanced. And then, of course, the Muslim question came up because in an interview with Anderson Cooper, Trump said there was a hatred coming from the Muslim community. There's a hatred. Islam hates us. And people were outraged. And that was brought up at the debate. Trump had a great answer. He really did. Trump. Jake Tapper said, Mr. Trump, you said Islam hates us. Do you mean all of Islam? Trump said, a lot of them. A lot of them. Do you want to refine that? No. No. There's something going on. There's something going on. It's not a few. And here's what amazes me. And again, this goes to whether it's this president, whether it's the era that we are living in, but the fact that we care more about other countries and other people from these countries than our own Americans, our own working men and women, is beyond me. Think about this. And I know we're running out of time until we have pop culture news, and I know we've gone a whole bunch of time here. But think about this. Trump gets criticized and called Islamophobic and a bigot and a racist. I mean, we're to the point now where Sarah Silverman and Conan O'Brien do a skit where she dresses as Adolf Hitler and comes onto the set, comes onto Conan O'Brien as if Hitler is a guest. And they do a bit. They do a comedy routine of Sarah Silverman dressed as Hitler, saying that he is kind of upset by the comparisons between him and Donald Trump. I mean, think about that. We're basically mocking, and comparing somebody to an individual who killed millions of Jews. That's what we're joking about. That's what we're having a ha-ha moment on. Cable television, and I mean, not that it makes it any better, but not HBO, not Cinemax, not Showtime, but TBS, Conan O'Brien, a nighttime variety show. It's like, hey, Hitler, how you doing? Oh, hi, how are you? Are you kidding me? Are you? I mean, that skit basically belittled every Jew who was murdered, every family member that had someone murder. I mean, amazing. And we're actually comparing a guy who killed millions of Jews to Donald Trump. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's where we are in this country that is controlled by liberals. Now, think about this. Donald Trump is getting this heat. He's being called Hitler. He's being compared to a guy who killed 6, 7, 8, 9 million Jews because he says there's hatred amongst Muslims and Islam. Now, first off, not every Muslim or people associated with Islam are terrorists, but their laws governing women is pretty hateful. And there's a lot of Muslims who feel women are nothing more than property. So, yeah, not all of them are terrorists, but most of them feel women are garbage. Okay? Now, I'm not going to sit here and re-litigate all the problems with Islam. But what I am going to point out is that Trump and other people that make this, as they would say, broad generalization about Islam and Muslims, get called Islamophobic and racist and bigoted. But yet, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, every aspect of the media, BuzzFeed, Huffington Post, you name it, paint American police officers as murderous killers. And nobody says, whoa, you're painting all police officers with a very, very big brush. Whoa, time out. When you hear Bernie Sanders say, a black mother, a black father has to worry about her or his child walking in the neighborhood and being shot by a police officer. I mean, is it me? Am I off base? Or is that a really, really wide, thick, deep brush to say black families everywhere in the United States, in every community, have to worry that their child is going to be killed by a cop? Isn't that the same? Isn't that on the same ballpark, the same sport as going, Islam hates America, Muslims hate America? Isn't that the same brush? What, isn't that the same thing? When I walk into a airport terminal and I see somebody in a hijab, or I see somebody with a turban on, or I see a Middle Eastern person, I have to worry that they're going to blow me up? Isn't that the same thing? Like I said, liberals, liberal media, this president, they care more about other countries and how other people in other countries feel. But when they care more about them than they care about us in America. You're going to tell me that's not a long painted brush? You never hear Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, or any of the liberal media go out of their way to make the distinction of not condemning all police. They don't. Sure, every once in a while, you'll hear the president or someone say, not all police officers are bad. But it's only after there's arm twisting going on. I mean, you can't even say all lives matter. If you say that, you're a racist. You're a bigot. You don't understand. We're not talking about all lives. We're talking about black. Again, black lives matter. The concept is people in charge, people in authority, the police, the army, whoever. The concept is all of these people don't think black lives matter. I mean, that's a generalization. That is no different than what people condemn Donald Trump for and call him Hitler. when he goes, hey, until we have a better vetting process, we can't let a flood of Muslims into our country from Saudi Arabia, from Pakistan, until we have a vetting process. We need to do something. Their community needs to do so. Something needs to be done. There's something going. How is that? How is that any different to when you turn on MSNBC, CNN, you go to the newspapers and you hear people talking about police and black families not being allowed or not being able to walk in neighborhoods without being killed? I mean, think about that. No one ever says it's a isolated incident. Nobody ever makes that distinction. But liberal media doesn't care. The president doesn't care. Somehow, in the past 7 years, we've been conditioned hate our own country. We've been conditioned to hate our own country. We've been bullied into despising our own country. What was the other big moment from the debate last night? And people said Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, they could have really jumped on Trump with the statement because he didn't walk it back, and he did. Again, go back to the South Carolina debate between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders says a mom and dad, a black mom and dad, have to worry. That is a generalization to say they have to worry that their son or daughter is going to get killed by a police officer is something that's very real. That is a generalization. That is no different than me saying when I go to an airport and I see a Muslim, I worry that he's got a bomb and he's going to blow up the airplane that I'm on. That is the same thing. That is the exact same thing. To say, well, when a black child goes in the neighborhood, he has to worry that a cop is going to shoot him. It is the same thing to make a generalization and paint police shootings with black folk. It is the same thing. And if I sat there and said, hey, every time I go into an airport or anytime I'm in an office building, anytime I see a Muslim, I'm suspicious and I think, what if they blow me up? What if they have a bomb? If I said that, I would be called Islamophobic. I would be called bigoted. I'd be called racist. I would be called every name in the book. But yet, you can say, every time that black child, or every time that black man, or every time that black woman goes to the store, takes a walk in their neighborhood, they have to worry that a white police officer is going to shoot them. And people go, yeah. And nobody goes, whoa, wait a minute. Isn't that police-ophobic? Well, what are you talking about? It happens. Yeah. And guess what? Muslims blowing up Americans, that happens too. Muslims hijacking airplanes and flying them into buildings, that happens too. Muslims with assault rifles shooting up Christmas parties, that happens too. Muslims shooting up rock concerts in Paris, over 100 people, that happens too. Every incident that you bring up of a black teen who's unarmed that gets shot by a white cop as your excuse to paint every cop as on the lookout to kill unarmed black kids, I can triple you. I can triple you and point out Muslims who have murdered Americans. I could triple you. World Trade Center. World Trade Center. Over 3,000. I bet you can't come up with 3,000 Tamir Rices. I bet you can't come up with 3,000 Freddie Grays. I bet you can't come up with 3,000. And that's just the World Trade Center. That's just the World Trade Center. But yet, that wide brush that we paint when we talk about Muslims and Islam, we're racist, Islamophobic. But that wide brush that liberals paint, police officers and unarmed black people, is somehow justified. It's somehow justified. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. It's stunning. And it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. And that was the other takeaway from last night. Those are my three takeaways. Trade, Islam, it's Social Security. And it really is as simple as making better deals. It really is that simple. Because everything in our government is already baked in. Everything's already baked in. When you talk about cutting the deficit, what are you going to do? What are you going to... You can't punish the American people. We have to grow businesses. We have to encourage businesses to manufacture here. And if that means punishing other countries, then that's what we have to do. If it means raising the rates on other countries that we do business with, rather it's us giving them money or us protecting them and they give us money, whatever it is. But you can't go, oh, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to cut off welfare. You can't do it. You can't do it. You can reform it. But again, when you bring up waste, fraud, and abuse, people say, well, it's only $20 billion, it's only $50 billion, it's only... Well, you're never going to cut social programs. It ain't going to happen. It's already baked in. All of these things are already baked in. So ultimately what has to be done is someone has to renegotiate. It's really that simple. I know it's hard for some people to understand because we've been programmed. We've been programmed to listen to a politician, our leaders, senators, congressmen. We've been programmed to listen to them give us a 5-minute answer. And at the end of that answer, we forget what we asked. We don't know what they just said. And what they said never happens. Sounds good. It's lofty. We're so programmed for that. When somebody comes in and goes, this is what we got to do. We got to renegotiate that deal. Can't kill it. You can't kill Social Security. You can't kill welfare. You can't kill unemployment. You've got to rework it and somehow make it work a little bit better. We can't get rid of the IRS. You're not going to get rid of the IRS. It's not going to happen. Because ultimately, people still need to pay taxes, so you still need people to collect that. I mean, you still need people to run that organization. There's things that are baked in. We're going to unbake the things that we have in our country. So when you hear Trump say, well, we have to renegotiate with drug companies, real simple. Yeah, but Mr. Trump, that only saves certain amount of money through Medicare. Oh, okay. But if you save $20 billion here, if you renegotiate on military as far as equipment and you save $100 billion here, if you pick up $100 million because you raise the rates on money that people need to give you because you have 30,000 troops in South Korea, because you got 10,000 troops in Germany, because you got... All of these things matter. And that's all it amounts to. And there's a certain amount of people in this country that can't handle the concept of having a quick, somewhat simplistic answer. But that's how life is. Life isn't always complicated. Life isn't always 10-minute answers. Sometimes life is as simple as you're born and then you die. It really is. Sometimes life is that simple. Just because you're the president of the United States, just because you're a senator, doesn't mean life gets thrown out of the window. I think Bill Clinton showed that. Because as the president of the United States, he still acted like a high school boy. He still acted like a frat. He acted like a frat boy. It's really that simple. There's my take on the debate. That's the takeaway. That's my statement. We've run out of time for this segment. It's the Rob Zicari Show. And side note, Ben Carson endorsed Donald Trump. Ben Carson endorsed Donald Trump. People are like, how could that be? Do you remember what Donald Trump said about Ben Carson? Well, they all say things about each other. What do you expect? Don't be stupid.